So I work at Environmental Protection Agency in Oregon, and one of the things that we're interested there is trying to understand how carbon cycles of forest ecosystems, and in particular with potential changes in forest management practices.
You have to use the mouse or the...
Oh, you do? I thought you were using the...
No,
oh, you were actually using the...
Any click?
Yeah. Okay. So sort of a background to the city, approximately 30% of all terrestrial carbon resides in forest soil, so it's a huge carbon store. And in the United States, approximately 68% of all forests are managed for timber. So that's a huge alteration to this potential carbon stock. And with sort of proposed regulation on carbon dioxide and potential development of carbon markets, there's the potential for alterations in forest management practices, and this might have implications for how carbon is stored or stabilized or changes with time. And additionally, also future projections and climate change might have an effect on how carbon is stored and stabilized in soils. So we're really interested in how will changing forest practices, carbon offset forestry practices, and additionally climate change affect carbon pools. And to sort of build upon some of the points that Marcus Kleber talked about, one of sort of our changing understanding of carbon stabilization is kind of going away from this idea of chemical recalcitrance, but more focusing on the soil environment and trying to understand that in relation to the different forms of carbon that exist and how those change. So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change projects that within the next 100 years, there could be as much as 5 to 10% change in soil moisture in these temperate and tropical regions. So that's a significant amount, a significant change in the moisture content. And some of the research that we've been doing in Western Oregon at the EPA has shown that we've got about 10 years of climate, soil climate data at the multiple sites along the Cascade region. And we're seeing that in the past decade, there's been an increase in soil temperature and some variation in soil moisture, but in general, sort of a decrease in soil moisture. So with that in mind, we wanted to kind of create a more of a, you know, somewhat controlled experiment where we could begin to test some of these ideas of how moisture, changes in moisture may affect carbon stabilization. And in particular, manganese cycling, so interested in redox cycling in these terrestrial soils. So there's really three studies that came out that sort of framed the research that we're doing. The first one was done in 2006 by Trouwborst. They were for the first time actually documented the presence of dissolved manganese 3, and here's a figure from their paper. They were looking at these extreme environments where there were very stark gradients between redox environments. So this is actually a profile from the Dead Sea, where you can see a decrease in oxygen concentration, an increase in dissolved manganese 3, and then once that goes down, you get this increase in hydrogen sulfide. And so this is actually in density units, but this depth corresponds to about 10 meters. So about 10 meters of the water column is poised by this manganese 3, where you don't get any oxygen and you don't have any hydrogen sulfide. So, and then additionally, there's a paper that came out in 1999. This is a forest litter layer. This is the top 2 centimeters of the forest layer. They use oxygen microelectrodes to profile the oxygen concentration of the depth. And what they found is that as much as 50% of that depth was actually anaerobic or suboxic. So, you know, when we start to look at these different scales, we start to see that these environments are really heterogeneous, and the implications of that on a larger scale might be quite profound. A third paper that sort of framed our experimental approach was by Ian Thompson at Purdue. They first demonstrated that fungal manganese oxidation occurs in subtoxic zones. So they had some microcosms, which we've designed some similar to that, where they first documented using X-ray fluorescence spectroscopy and manganese K-edge veins, where they saw that there's this accumulation of manganese among fungal hyphae, and then which was in the manganese 4 plus, the oxidized state, and then over here it was in the manganese 2 reduced state. So we were interested in kind of combining this idea that in terrestrial systems where we typically think of them as being oxic or aerobic, that in fact there may be quite a significant portion of the soil might have these anoxic or suboxic microenvironments that could be poised by manganese 3. So manganese 3, or manganese in general, is a really important element in soils. Typically when you start to have reducing conditions, you have single electron transfer reactions. Oxygen, as it becomes reduced, you get superoxide, with accepts one electron, two electrons, you get hydrogen peroxide, and then three electrons, you get the hydroxyl free radical, which is extremely extremely powerful oxidant and can destroy a lot of living systems. The interesting thing is, so both hydrogen peroxide and superoxide can react to form that hydroxyl free radical. Manganese, actually, in all of its forms, both the reduced state, the 3 plus state, and the 4 plus, the manganese oxides, are able to react with those free radicals and basically, oxidize them or reduce them and neutralize that effect, thereby stabilizing organic matter in soils. But in addition to that, organisms such as fungi have been able to utilize through various extracellular enzymes like peroxidases, they can utilize this manganese cycle to produce manganese 3, which is also a powerful oxidant, and when stabilized with organics, can act as a diffusible oxidant throughout soil systems. So there's a sort of interplay between stabilization and destabilization. So our hypothesis was that suboxic soil environments in forest ecosystems and other potential terrestrial ecosystems could be poised by this manganese 3, and that they play a central role in organic matter cycling due to the generation of that manganese 3 free radical and its interaction with oxygen free radicals. And so we wanted to investigate the effects of that using a model system inoculated with the manganese oxidizing fungi. This is just a picture of some of the lab cultures as we got them going. This is a picture of our model sediment system. And then a little brief description of the experimental conditions. We used the actual surface soil. We gamma irradiated it before using it. We mixed it with a known type of, it was from a ponderosa forest. We added some ponderosa pine needles, and then we supplemented it with a little bit of lab synthesized bernicite, hosmonite, manganese oxide, just to kind of boost the system. But we found that actually wasn't necessary, that the ambient amount of manganese in the system was enough to do that, to carry forward these processes. We used Pleurotus austritus, which is a white rot fungi, but it does well in soils, so it's a really strong oxidizer, lignin degrader. All of the microcosms were saturated and incubated for 21 days. And here's some pictures of us kind of getting them together. And I forgot to mention my collaborators. This is Mark Johnson. He's a research soil scientist at EPA. And then Peter Nico, the other collaborator, who's going to present next. Okay, so this is a picture of the microcosm and some of the locations that we actually looked at. This is an oxygen microprofile using oxygen microelectrodes. You can see that. I forgot to mention, we did put an organic layer just to ensure that the fungi were able to grow. We found out that actually wasn't even necessary. They did fine just straight in the mineral soil. But this is, you can see that it's about 100% oxygen saturation until you reach that mineral soil, and then it quickly decreases when you have this sort of suboxic region. Suboxic region here, and then below that is this anoxic anaerobic region. And so for today's talk, I'm just going to quickly focus in on that suboxic region and show you some results. Here's some pictures of one little feature here. This is sort of a hyphal mat surrounded by what looks like this dark precipitate. Here's a close-up of it. Here is an X-ray fluorescence map, and you can see that so the red is actually manganese, and around that hyphal mat is this concentrated manganese, and when we look at the X-ray absorption spectroscopy, we can see that, well, first, so that the regions outside of that correspond to typically reduced manganese forms here, manganese 2 and manganese 3. These isolated spots, which are probably the supplemented manganese we added, or the rind around here, correspond to manganese 4. And then we have this sort of transition zone, which is on sort of behind that outmoving fungal mat oxidation front, which is a sort of mixed 2, 3, 4 form. So then, you know, once we started to understand the chemistry and the distribution of manganese, we were interested in what's the association with that with carbon forms. And so we interfaced our X-ray absorption work with synchrotron FTIR spectroscopy. So we took the same microcosms, the same locations that we did with the X-ray work, and then we used the IR spectroscopy to examine those different regions. And this is actually some work that we're still kind of ongoing, trying to figure out. And so I don't have a great handle on the spectra. We're doing this IR mapping, which gives us hundreds and hundreds of IR spectra. It's a huge amount of data. And so we're just still kind of working out how to reduce that into some sort of meaningful and interpretable way. But I'll kind of show you the approach that we're taking. So here is a transect that we did from the center of the fungal mat out. I used a clustering approach to basically cluster the similarity between spectra as you grow across. And you can kind of see it starts to group out within the different regions. And then those spectra here map out and then have, you know, corresponding different functional groups. We were starting to kind of look at the more of the polysaccharide absorption bands versus aromatic absorption bands to try and see if we see a decrease in aromatics and an increase in polysaccharide as the fungal hyphae begin to potentially mediate that manganese cycling degradation or breakdown of lignin, the more aromatic types of functional groups. So that's something that we're still kind of working out to tease. The problem is that some of these are, this is a average plus or minus standard deviation of, you know, could be 100, 200 spectra. So some of the fine details get lost when you use this type of approach. I think what we're going to try to do is maybe focus in on individual wave numbers and do clustering analysis that way, so we have more of a refined idea of what's going on for those particular types of functional groups. Here's just another, so we did some mapping to show differences in, for instance, polysaccharides versus lignin versus the amide, which corresponds to maybe the chitin or the fungal hyphae material. And these kind of, you can see that they're kind of similar patterns across, although there's a huge, potentially huge difference in the type of spectra as you cross these regions. So that differences within a region could be masked out. So, and here's just another, so that I mentioned this sort of transition zone that had this 2, 3, 4, which was kind of interesting. This is an optical picture of a pine needle that was in that zone. You can see these little black craters that we believe is manganese-induced oxidation. And then we went in and did some spectroscopy here. The other part of this is to kind of, to help refine this, is we're using destructive sampling of IR. So we go in and actually pull out different regions or kind of standards and use a germanium sphere. So in typical IR mapping, it's a diffuse reflectance, and you get a lot of noise in the data. So we're trying this out. We're getting better spectra. This is a fungal hyphae. You can see polysaccharides, amides, aliphatics, and whatnot. So to be continued. Conclusions, we need to do some more of this destructive IR mapping, but the X-ray absorption, the X-ray fluorescence and Zanes combined with the microelectrodes allowed us to delineate those redox zones and to show that manganese is different between those zones and cycling differently, and that organic matter decomposition appears to be pronounced in that suboxic zone, although we need to do further interpretation of the IR spectra. And I'd like to thank Marcus Cleaver and Marco Kilowit, who've kind of helped us along the discussion and encouragement in this project. So thank you.
Okay, we have time for a question or two, perhaps. Yeah, I shouldn't do that to the iPad.
Is oxalic acid produced by this one?
And how does that fit into the whole scenario?
These ones produce lactase and maintenance peroxidase, which are like the two dominant extracellular enzymes that mediate this maintenance cycling. So manganese, they'll oxidize manganese 2 to manganese 3. And then they typically do secrete some sort of organic acid or chelate that will be able to stabilize that manganese 3 and allow it to potentially diffuse out into different regions and you know, mediate that aromatic decomposition process. So I think, I don't know 100% because I'm not a mycologist, but I think, you know, oxalate might be used, or oxalic acid might be something that they produce.
Yeah, because I was just curious, I didn't see any evidence on your IR spectrum of that.
Right, yeah. But yeah. Maybe interesting to look at that.
Okay, thanks a lot.